fearless, informative, and unfettered. Mark Morano is Unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT, today's News Talk Radio. Trying out a new delivery there. That was a great discussion we had about the safe society with the filmmaker last hour, and I would look forward to checking that out. That trailer was wild. It's part of this dystopia that we're living in. And I mentioned safe and effective, which brings us to our topic to open up today's program this hour. AstraZeneca COVID vaccine, i.e. jab. You can watch, someone put this together. This was the Milk Bar TV, which is incredibly well edited. It's the narrative that the AstraZeneca COVID jab is completely safe and effective. We can watch the evolution of all the bullshit, hype, propaganda, and how it completely devolves and falls apart. We lived through this psyop in real time. They wanted something to be true, and they wanted you to believe it by more than they wanted it to be true. And so they just made all sorts of claims out of their ass repeatedly. So let's watch this. This is clip one. The narrative that AstraZeneca vaccine is safe, and watch it fall apart in a series of clips. This is so well done. Pay attention. It's in two parts. This is part one, clip one. Let's take a look.
AstraZeneca vaccine was shown in clinical trials to be safe and effective.
The vaccine has met requirements for standards for safety, quality and efficacy.
Germany, France, Spain and Italy are all taking the precautionary measure of suspending use of the vaccine because of fears about possible side effects, including blood clots. The AstraZeneca vaccine has already been suspended in the Netherlands, Ireland, Iceland, Bulgaria, Denmark and Norway.
I have no concern about the AstraZeneca and specifically the blood clot issue that's been emerged in Europe.
WHO saying no causal relationship this morning, no deaths associated with the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine.
And overnight, the European Medical Agency head said the same thing.
A senior official at the European Medicines Agency has said there is a link between the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine and blood clots.
In Europe, they now believe that they have tied the AstraZeneca vaccine to a handful of cases there, 18 known deaths.
The UK's leading health experts have issued new guidance following evidence that in extremely rare cases, people who've had the vaccine have gone on to develop blood clots. The official regulator, the MHRA, said the guidance was not proof that the vaccine had caused the clots, but it said the link was getting firmer. So, from now on, people aged between 18 and 29 will be offered an alternative to the Oxford AstraZeneca jab.
Canada has paused the rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine to anyone under 55. Germany has suspended use for under 60s in Berlin and Munich. And Spain is currently only giving the AstraZeneca shot to those aged 60 to 79.
Prime Minister announcing in a snap press conference last night that most Australians under the age of 50 should not be given the AstraZeneca jab due to the rare risk of blood clots.
AstraZeneca is phased out. From October, it'll be used by request only.
Starts out as the greatest thing since sliced bread to bye-bye, you're no more. This is what happens when you have public health officials pushing politics and tyrannical policies and allowing no dissent. This is what we decided, and we're a military operation. They treated everyone as though we were lowly privates in the army, and we couldn't question. Our role was just to accept the jab and die. And any challenge was met with, you're not an expert. You got to listen to the science. You will be silenced. You will be canceled. You will be defunded. You will not have a job. You will not be able to travel. You will not be able to go to the gym. You will not be able to eat in a restaurant if you don't get this. It's safe and effective. Oh, guess what? It's not safe and effective. We pulled it off the market. This is the horseshit we lived through. Really. And this is clip two. This is the continuation and the finish of that. It's a shorter clip as this vaccine just continues to fail. And again, I need to point this out. I'm not showing you some vaccine critics' claims. I'm showing you the corporate media, which is funded probably more, almost every clip you're watching, they're probably more than 50% funded by the pharmaceutical companies. I know Fox News, Roger Ailes admitted 70% of their revenue came from big pharmaceutical companies. So this is how bad it was that even the corporate media, mainstream, had to report all this in real time. Clip two.
The Australian government banning Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. And the reason is so there will be no further cases of AstraZeneca-related thrombocytopenia.
They probably do occur in about 4 per million.
There's a 6 in 1 million chance of this occurring.
1 in 100,000 people that receive the AstraZeneca vaccine may see this.
The risk they're talking about, which is the clot, is about 1 in 50,000.
Major COVID vaccine is being withdrawn from the global market after its makers admitted it can lead to a very serious side effect.
AstraZeneca admitted the claims in court documents lodged in February
that the COVID shield vaccine can cause blood clots. In the UK alone, the firm is facing more than 50 lawsuits over these claims.
AstraZeneca made billions of pounds. They are market capitalization of 170 billion, the second largest publicly listed company. Their CEO made 18 million last year. To them, it is pennies. To our lives, people are relying on food banks. People are at risk of losing their houses because they did what they were told were the right thing.
Yeah, 163 people have received compensation from the vaccine damage scheme. Claims against the vaccine damage scheme have soared to 11,000.
And there you have it. I love it. 1 in 1 million, 1 in 400,000, 1 in 100,000, 1 in 50,000. It just keeps dropping. Your risk just kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And they say it with such certainty too. It's only this risk. I just to repeat for the record, no one in my family even contemplated getting the vaccine. Oh, should I get that vaccine? We didn't trust any of the public health people pushing it a year later. It wasn't even on the radar. I look forward to going to my doctor. I was all ready for him to say, oh, you haven't had the COVID. I was ready to have fun and ridicule the doctor for being an idiot. I literally was. He never even brought it up that I didn't have the COVID vaccine. I was really angry. I was disappointed. I wasn't going to bring it up. I wasn't looking for a fight. But I wasn't going to walk away from a fight with a doctor over it at the time either. And, you know, my 90-something-year-old mother at the time, she would have been 91 or something, 91 probably, didn't even consider getting it. I mean, there was no reason. Now, the people with high risk factors didn't get it. I fought the nursing home where my aunt, who finally died in 98, not of COVID, I fought them for getting the booster. She had initially decided to get the original and then wasn't sure about the booster. And I talked with her and then she said no. And man, the pressure they put on her to get that booster. And they even isolated her. I mean, they shortened her life. I mean, it was a horrible situation. But this is why, because it's safe and effective. When it's not safe and effective, you're being lied to. And you know, to the extent that we were lied to, this is always worth showing. This is Stephen Colbert, the comedian, Late Show, how he went along in the corporate government collusion promoting all the COVID jabs with his COVID dance, the vaccine dance. This is what they pass as entertainment. This is what they did to get you to take it. Clip three, I don't think you need to say anything else. Just watch this insanity. Stephen Colbert dancing with a bunch of needles, people playing needles with jabs on their head. They've got the whole thing, tequila, the whole song going in the background. They're dancing throughout the studio. They have aerial shots. He's going through the audience. We have to be careful not to play this because the music's probably copyrighted. But this was the insanity and the visuals of this. He's now dancing with people in the audience, celebrating this life-saving vaccine. We're saved. Oh, we can return our life back to normal. Bill Gates, who funds everything in the entire world of public health, says we can't return to normal until everyone gets the jab. So our job is to make sure everyone gets the jab so we can return to normal. And by the way, even though you had your jab, you still have to wear masks in Hollywood all the way up until the end of 2023 on some of the shows. I think it was game shows, The View. You can see the audience still masked up. It's sand and just absolute anti-science insanity. This is the world in which we live. All right. another anti-science insanity where you've been scammed, you've been conned, is in recycling. And this is a great clip. This is Canada's recycling system. It's a total scam. A large portion of the recyclable waste ending up in incinerators and landfill sites, just like regular trash. But hey, you'll be penalized. You'll be fined if you don't separate your bins and do it all exactly right. You'll be socially shamed. You'll be morally shamed. You got to separate all that. Watch this news clip, and it's amazing how they come around. Clip four.
We're testing the Canadian recycling system, buying 9 tons of plastic, diverting it to a warehouse in BC, and installing satellite tracking devices.
They connect with a GPS satellite every 2 to 3 minutes and then show you on a map within 10 meters where they are.
By getting three companies with ties to recycling programs to haul it away. Merlin Plastics says it's committed to a more sustainable future. GFL, an environmental solutions leader. Waste Connections encourages recycling and reuse. Our trackers are on the move. Turns out it also stayed in BC, but not to be recycled.
So, what does it say up there?
Waste to energy facility.
Our plastic bale came in here, went in there, and they incinerated it.
Okay.
They burned it.
No. I didn't realize that plastic was getting burned.
GFL tells us there isn't demand for our kind of plastic. So burning it is the cost-effective solution. Burning creates toxic ash that needs to be disposed of. Finally, there's the batch with Waste Connections.
You see the trucks that are in there?
Yeah.
It's also still in BC.
What does that look like to you?
Dump trucks.
And Natasha is in for a surprise.
I mean, you see.
Holy, yeah.
It's all just going in. I mean, this is a landfill.
Yeah.
Is this where you figured it would end up?
No, it's definitely not where I thought my recycling would end up.
Remember, Waste Connections encourages recycling and reuse. But as it turns out, not illegal. Recycling haulers in BC have no obligation to actually recycle the plastic. Mountains of our plastic burned overseas.
And now my son is getting always sick.
Tons of it dumped in a Canadian landfill.
All right. I don't know that I'm buying the last part of that news segment where the toxic waste and your son's always sick. I'm not buying that necessarily, unless they're right by the landfill and it's just all the particulate matter in general or pollution making them sick. I don't think it's particularly the plastic. But full disclosure, that's who my personal trash service is, GFL. And I was sort of conned when I got my original trash service. It was they came to our door to door. We're a family-owned small business. We've been in business 35 years. And that's why I chose them, because I had had several trash pickup companies that were all corporate. Everything had to go through a website. There was no personalized care. When you had a problem, there was literally no human you could talk to. It was always a call center. I mean, no human meaning no one from the company that could solve it. It was always a call center. You leave messages. Maybe something would happen. I got so sick of it. So it was great appeal that this company came. We're a family-run business. Within about a month of me picking up the service, they were bought out by GFL, which makes up the question, did they know that they were being bought out when they came? Maybe it was 2 months, but did they know they were going to be bought out when they came around? Hey, we're a family-run business. We're getting new business. Were they making the offer to the large corporate guys a lot more attractive by jazzing up their subscriber base? I don't know. Maybe, probably. But GFL, I love the name. It's GFL Environmental. They don't even use the word trash service anymore. Anyway, but there, you know, it just goes to show you there's no requirement, at least in Canada. I'm not sure about it. Maybe that's a local jurisdiction thing, depending on county, state, that the actual trash who picks up your plastic has to actually recycle it versus just burn it, incinerate it like regular trash. But we've been conned on that. And I've shown you other clips on that. We've gone through. I've had Patrick Moore on this program talking about it. And even the sea of plastic is a fiction. It's actually the plastic waste problem comes down to a few countries in Asia that are going through rapid development that are just not good stewards of the plastic waste issue. And they're dumping it in the ocean. Okay. One more clip here. This is great. This is Jordan Peterson, the psychiatrist from Canada, now delving hard into the climate issue. He calls climate science, after his own investigation, after going to several conferences, talking to many scientists on this, climate science is a, quote, appalling scam, unquote. I buy that. This is Jordan Peterson explaining his position on climate change.
What passes for the settled science is nothing of the sort. Okay. In everywhere you look, if you're a scientist, everywhere you look into any given question deeply, you run into conundrums and profound sources of disagreement, even about what's hypothetically fundamental. Mm-hmm. I mean, the climate science is a good example of that. And yeah. That's an appalling scam.
How so?
Well, here's the simplest way to look at it. You can tell me what you make of this. Okay, so we're essentially in a carbon dioxide drought by historical standards. So if you look at the proportion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over the last number of hundreds of millions of years, like a pretty whopping time frame, we're at a very, very low level. We dropped to about 350 parts per million by, say, 1850, something like that. Plants start to die at 250, right? Because okay. They need carbon dioxide. So we were almost at the point where the plants were going to start to die. That's how low the carbon dioxide levels are. Now they have been increasing. Why? Well, some of that's probably man-made. You know, that's not exactly settled, but we could give the devil his due and say some of that's man-made. Okay, so now we're up to something in the low 400s, and that's been increasing, and perhaps because of industrial output. So what's been the major consequence? The major consequence is that the planet is 20% greener than it was in the year 2000. 20%. This is NASA data. No one disputes this, by the way. The satellite imagery is absolutely clear.
Okay.
20% greener. An area the size of the continental U.S. has greened since the year 2000.
All I can say is, spot on, spot on, spot on. He sounds like me. I mean, this is what I wrote about, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, what I wrote about in Green Fraud, what I go on TV and talk about. Every one of his points are exactly 100% scientifically correct, defensible. And it's amazing because this is, Jordan Peterson never delved into this before, just told me, I mean, the last 6 months that I'm aware of. I mean, full time like this, he's really, really incredible, articulate scientific spokesman for climate skepticism. So kudos to him. He's in Canada too, and he sees the great reset forces on him. He's going through some kind of psychiatric retooling because of his, you know, they didn't like what he had say about, I guess, you know, he violated free speech codes in Canada on, you know, whether issues on lockdowns and other things. Well, final thing here is James Taylor, the president of the Heartland Institute, my friend, wrote an incredible piece, an American thinker, about Benji Bakker. Benji Bakker is who I showed you clips maybe a couple weeks ago. He was on The View with Elisa Ferrer. That's The View's idea of a conservative. You get someone who hates Trump, who's an establishment Republican, who accepts climate change as the problem, and doesn't really push back on a lot of issues. It's just like a milquetoast Republican, not conservative. I said milquetoast Republican, not even a conservative, really. Anyway, she interviewed him, and his whole message is, and you've seen me interview members of parliament, it could not be more destructive, is that Republican Party in the United States needs to accept climate as a problem, a crisis, and come up with our own solutions, free market solutions. And that conservatives demand it. We need conservative solutions. So the question, James Taylor from Heartland Institute, in his article on Benji Bakker today at American Thinker, is Benji Bakker a conservative? So I just want to go through, it's 11-point takedown. I'll do this really quick. This is the conservative activist who the liberal media loves. He's been featured on CNN, ABC. Here it is. Benji Bakker proudly described himself as a never Trumper and preferred Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump in 2016. Probably Biden to Trump in 2020, I don't know. Benji Becker slammed Trump's restrictions on immigrants from terrorist-tied nations and anti-Muslim. He retweeted statements supporting banning Trump from social media. He called for a reinstatement of FDR New Deal-style policies like Civilian Conservation Corps, which is what AOC has been pushing, advocated government control of 30% of America's land, 30 by 30, for environmental purposes, claimed the whole bunch of falsehoods about January 6th, made attacks on Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, asserted lawmakers who do not support COVID-19 vaccinations have to be one of the lowest possible lows. So it was all for the jab and forcing people to take it. I believe I'm right about the forcing. That could be, he might have just been urging people to take it. He criticized people who didn't wear face masks during COVID as stupid and not protecting others because they want to make a political statement. And I've showed you the clip of this. He thanked Greta Thunberg for playing a critical role in generating awareness around the issue of climate change, not criticized Greta Thunberg for instilling baseless scientific fear. Anyway, this is the guy going around saying he's a conservative and conservatives need to care about climate change because it's a problem. And he's sweeping in many House members and the Republican Kevin McCarthy. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but this is what, you know, we can't lose our party the way Europe has lost their party, where you don't have a single major European politicians are terrified to stand up and challenge any access, not only of the science, but they won't even challenge the net zero concept. Like, oh yes, each sector must have its goals and limits as prescribed by the UN. I'm all for that, but we're just going a little too fast. And let's postpone the deadlines. You're pathetic. We've seen the future that these Republican activists, conservatives want in America, and we see it in Canada. We see it in Europe, and we say hell no to that future. We see Pierre Poilievre, an otherwise articulate, great candidate running against Justin Trudeau, talk about the climate. Oh, yeah, we're going to plant trees and do carbon capture, like terrified of ever being, oh, my gosh, he's a denier. And then you have someone like with courage, like Jordan Peterson, just laying it all out. Anyway. All right. Another man with great courage when we come back is Tom DeWeese, who now works for CFACT, Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, and has a website there as well. Tom DeWeese is one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty. He's been fighting the UN Sustainable Development, UN Agenda 21, UN Agenda 2030, 30 by 30, all of this madness on the climate, the Green New Deal. My friend Tom DeWeese will be with us when we come back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
Los Angeles has been described as a suburb looking for a city. Join me as we explore LA's neighborhoods and the local restaurants, cafes, and bars that are an integral part of these vibrant and diverse communities.
Today we are going to cook a small steak for people who are really quite hungry.
Very, very simple. A couple squeezes of lemon in there.
Since you're adding the meat, and you can do also do it with tofu options as well for the vegetarians.
Olive oil. So now we're gonna season it up. Fresh grind black pepper.
Really hot and busy in here.
I'm gonna go ahead and make some butter toast.
Olive oil.
Ah, smells, really smells good.
Grab our shiitake mushrooms.
Season with salt a little bit.
Boy, it's getting hot in the kitchen. Need another drink of my beer. Ah, that's the best part of cooking.
And we are ready to put our plate together.
Add the mussels right around the rim. See, we have really nice colors, nice piece of fish.
We just need to add a little bit of powdered sugar.
And I will just put a little bit of reduction glaze over the top.
When you add a pesto like this onto a braised meat, the smells that just come up are just wonderful. Take it from me, you've got a good thing going here.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Plug in.
Website?
TNTradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's News Talk Radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano and TNT. All right, joining the program now is my friend Tom DeWeese, one of the nation's leading advocates for individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights. He is the president of the American Policy Center, which is AmericanPolicy.org. He is also the national grassroots coordinator for CFAC, Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, CFAC.org. So welcome back to the program, Tom.
I'm glad to be with you, Mark. Thank you.
All right. We've been talking today. Well, one of the things we had is a Bill Gates interview where he's being asked about how tough it's going to be. He wants to put the entire world, including the U.S., on a wartime footing in which to fight climate change. And they're talking, you know, when you hear AOC and you hear other climate activists talk about this, they look back at World War II food rationing and energy rationing and the factories being converted over to just make weapons of war as sort of, they look at it sort of fondly, like, yeah, that was the American spirit. We need to do the same thing. Bill Gates says we need to fight climate as we did World War II, except this time we're fighting greenhouse gases, all for one measure of success. Can we meet the net zero climate goals as propagated by the United Nations? So just let's start with that, Tom. What's wrong with fighting climate as though it's a world war? And what's wrong with literally doing anything and sacrificing everything in order to meet the UN's net zero climate goals?
Number one, there is no climate crisis. It just doesn't
good,
exist.
Good place to start, okay.
If you take all these environmental programs that they're trying to put in place, the whole wind and solar and what it's doing to our food supplies and what it's doing to, for example, if you have millions of acres of solar panels side by side across the country, the materials that they make the panels out of create warming. It's all a bogus issue. And the things that they're putting in place, as you well know, are destroying the environment much more than anything, any factories or anything else around the country that we've had are doing. So.
Well, Bill Gates, it was Anderson Cooper who had asked him, well, you know, you don't live that lifestyle. You're in a private jet. You have a big mansion. You have one of the car. And Bill Gates admitted to having one of the highest carbon footprints. And he's basically asking him, how can the ordinary person do it if you can't even live within it? And Bill Gates' answer said, well, I buy carbon offsets. And he spends, I don't know, he was claiming he spent millions of dollars on carbon offsets, which in many cases means setting aside land in Africa so Africans can't develop their own land. By the way, one report, I think it was Financial Times, 20%, 25% of the land in some of the poorest countries in Africa have been set aside by white, wealthy Westerners for no development so that they could justify their lifestyle under the climate narrative. But so Bill Gates thinks buying a carbon offset of some kind basically means he can continue doing whatever he wants while he promotes this austerity on the rest of us. What should our response be when this kind of thing is happening? We're seeing it with everyone, all the Hollywood celebrities, John Kerry. They always give the same answer. Well, I buy offsets.
Yeah. Well, talk about how the elites think. But, what you're talking about, they always say that they are there to help the poor and the disadvantaged. That's number one. They're the ones who care about that, not these horrible capitalists. You know, that's what we hear. Well, you take a look at what they are doing to the poor, the people who are trying to survive, people trying to get ahead. And for example, electric cars that are selling for what? $35,000, $45,000, $85,000. And that's not even counting the battery cost. And you have poor people who maybe have an old car, but it gets them where they need to go. All of a sudden, they're not allowed to have it. Small companies, little restaurants, take away the way they cook the food, take away the food they're allowed to cook, on and on. That takes that away and their ability to live. You talk about an elite bunch that, you know, they see themselves at the top and they're just going to live that way. You know, they're buying carbon setbacks. That is just bogus. And the people in Africa, it is to them sustainable for them to have to walk 5 miles a day to get their water and sit around the campfire at night instead of having the modern things that we live with. And they have been saying that for the last couple of decades, that's okay because that's sustainable. These people are elite tyrants that do not care. You put these programs together, all of their programs, none of them help the environment. Bill Gates wants to put a cover over the whole earth to block out the sun. Everything on earth that lives needs the sun. And so you put that over the top and you put the solar panels along the bottom, and this they call protecting the environment. These people are nuts.
All right. Well, you're the author of the book, Agenda 21, The Wrenching Transformation of America. Let's start with that. Let's go back. Just give us a brief summary. What is Agenda 21? When did it come? When did sustainable development be foisted upon the West? Does it all begin in the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, or did it begin many decades before? And what's behind it? And what is this wrenching transformation that they're trying to do in America?
By the way, that statement, the wrenching transformation of America, came from Al Gore in his book, Earth and the Balance, that we all had to go through in order to put everything back in place. So what you're talking about with the whole World War II kind of approach, I mean, yes, that's what they're talking about. Sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. And, you know, sustainable development, this is the term. This came up. They've been working on this for several decades, long before 1992. And they had a whole lot of various UN summits, and they came up, you know, biodiversity treaty and all these sorts of things they came up with. Gro Harlem Brundtland came up with the term sustainable. And she was in charge of, what was it, the 76 conference, I'm thinking, something when she came up with that. And she was the head of the Socialist Party, where she is, you know. This whole idea has absolutely nothing to do with protecting the environment. Sustainable is really the code word for locking down our society. Their goal, and they say it over and over and over again, is to get rid of free enterprise, because that's a bunch of nasty capitalists who you can't trust. They'll upset our well-ordered society. And so they want to get rid of that. And sustainable, when you hear anybody say the word sustainable, understand that that is a word designed to get you to, you know, your mind suddenly shuts off. And you go, yes, yes, we must protect the environment. But, you know, I've had environmentalists get in my face and they say, it doesn't matter how many rights you think you have if you don't have a planet to stand on. That's the fear tactic that they use. What we've had in the past, Mark, is that when you had tyrants who wanted to rule the world, what they did was they put armies together and they would go in, they'd invade, they'd break things, they'd kill people, and they'd subjugate the people who were left. These guys are diabolical. They have come up with a way to get us to voluntarily give up our liberties. And you know, what's the message that is so powerful to do that? The message is the fear factor of environmental Armageddon. And it doesn't matter how many times we've proven that everything they're doing is wrong. It doesn't exist. There's not a problem here with what people are doing. Why do they keep sticking to it? Because the environment does not recognize legal boundaries of your national sovereignty, of your nation, legal boundaries of your state, legal boundaries of your community, the legal boundaries of your yard. All of that, the rivers run through it, the trees are growing and blowing, and the wind's blowing and all that. And so the environment is their handy tool to get us to surrender our liberties because we've got to protect the environment. And yet everything they're doing is damaging the environment beyond anything anybody ever imagined.
Well, on that vein, there's been recent reports, CBS this morning reporting on this whole movement out there to give legal personhood status to trees, rivers, natural objects in the world where they could, someone, obviously they can't sue, but they can sue a developer, a property owner for violating the rights of a tree. You can't cut it down. For violating a river or dam, you can't, a river, you can't dam it. How big of a threat is that? Is that part of the sustainable development movement? And do these natural objects have legal personhood status? Should they have legal personhood status in our court system?
Well, it's definitely part of the sustainable plan. Anything they can use to get you to emotionally give up your liberties. 20, 30 years ago, and I think it's still going on, communities had NGOs that were going through the community, and they were setting a value to every single tree. And by doing that, now if you cut down a tree, you have just damaged the community by the value of that tree. And so this is how they use that everything with this value, you're not allowed to do anything unless we say you can. And what's amazing about that, setting the value to the trees and so forth, but putting massive wind farms and solar farms across huge millions of acres of land, they have to cut down millions of trees. But somehow that doesn't reduce the value on the earth. This is what we deal with.
Or they're allowed to put in all these windmills that have more legal takings of rare, allegedly endangered whale species that are more than the actual number of known species to exist, because it's wind energy, they get a pass, whereas no fossil fuel project would ever get a pass on what the wind, offshore wind, because it's politically protected. Yeah. Well, let's go back in time, though. Let's go back. It sounds like in the 1980s, was the U.S. free from the sustainable development, we'll call it virus? Was it really 1992 with that Earth Summit that introduced it, or was it already? Did it already have a foothold in America at that point? Give us the history of it.
Well, you had the environmental movement. The environmental movement, the Sierra Clubs and the all the different ones that are there. World Economic Forum, not World Economic Forum. My brain just went dead on these groups. The World Wildlife Fund and the Nature Conservancy and so forth. They were already out there pushing these ideas, and these are their agendas. And the when the Earth Summit was put together, those organizations were the ones that helped write Agenda 21 in the first place. They put their own private agendas into it, what they wanted. And that's what they put together. This is how they operate with these international meetings, that these NGOs, non-governmental organizations, private organizations, a lot of them are 501c3s. They are not government. But the United Nations, from its very inception in 1945, had a provision in there of officially recognizing NGOs as part of the whole situation. And you have a couple of different kinds of NGOs, and the International Red Cross that helps people health-wise, that's one. But the other side are the ones that are activists. They are taught to lobby. They help put these agendas together. They get these international meetings where they get world leaders to sign off on the document. That's what we had with Agenda 21. George H.W. Bush signed off on it. But they're told that these are not treaties. They are voluntary programs that a community can just put together. But then they go into when Bill Clinton became president, he created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. So now this voluntary thing on this council were these NGOs, representatives of almost every federal agency, and the several national or international corporations. And they began to put together a plan that the purpose was to take this voluntary idea and make it national law. And what happened then, going into the states, the 10th Amendment says that the federal government can't dictate a lot of things to the states. How do they get around that? They create these grant programs, and the NGOs go into your city councils, your state legislatures, your county commissions, and they say, oh, this is just a voluntary, but we got grant money. We got the money for you to put it all together. And they get them to voluntarily do it. But those grants now have all kinds of details in it that to comply with the grant, you have to do these things. I'll give you an example. In my hometown in Newark, Ohio, we have a courthouse in the center of town in a square. And around the square, people drive around and there are traffic lights and so forth there. The city council needed to replace infrastructure underneath the streets. There were pipes, there were wires, 100 years old, legitimate thing to do. Some NGOs got them to apply for a grant from the EPA. The EPA gave them the grant to replace that infrastructure, but they said, you also need to remove all the traffic lights around the square because sitting at a traffic light creates climate change. So they made them, in this grant, put a roundabout on each corner of the square. And I mean, how many more millions did that cost in taking care of some lamps up in the sky, you know? But this is the kind of the way that it works. You'll end up finding that certain grants will tell the community what kind of building materials they can use. Some of the grants dictate how about energy use, bike lanes, all of those kind of things. There are NGOs pushing these things. There are grants for it. So this is how they put it in place.
Now, that's a pet peeve of mine to talk about traffic circles. Are you saying this proliferation? I live in Virginia. The proliferation of traffic circles is because they want to get rid of lights because of greenhouse gases. Is that what's happening?
That's one of the excuses. Yes. Yeah.
I rented a right-hand drive car in Scotland for the UN Climate Summit in 2021, I believe. And I took out two tires on the Scottish traffic circles. I've never melded well with traffic circles, but now that you tell me that that's the reason they're cropping up, not because of traffic flow, one of the key reasons, now I hate them even more, these traffic circles that keep popping up.
I'm right there with you. And we have them right here in the town I'm living in. And they make absolutely no sense. They don't need them. But we had this one highway that had an intersection and had a traffic light. Now they have three roundabouts to get through it. It just makes no sense.
All right, we have to take a break. And I'm come back. I want to talk to you a little bit about that Rio Earth Summit and then Nancy Pelosi reading the it's end of 21 into the congressional record and where we've come since then. But we're talking to Tom DeWeese, who runs the American Policy Center. He's the president of that. He's also the National Grassroots Coordinator for CFAT, Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. We'll be right back after these messages on TNT. This is Unleashed. Stay tuned.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
Thank you. The next time you think you can illegally handle your mobile phone while driving and get away with it, think again. Phone detection cameras are in operation on New South Wales roads.
Hello?
So if you're driving and illegally handle your mobile phone, you can stop it or cop it.
Exposing the motives and agenda of the world's most powerful.
Unleashed.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio. We're talking with Tom DeWeese, the president of the American Policy Center and the grassroots coordinator, national grassroots coordinator for CFAC, Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. All right, let's just get us up to the present. I just want to, like, people to have a thumbnail history. So you mentioned all the environmental groups were pushing this. So 1992, to me, seems like a watershed year. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is when then President George H.W. Bush, facing a tough election against Bill Clinton, Ross Perot. If I recall correctly, John Sununu, his chief of staff, defended Bush or even urged Bush to go to the Rio Earth Summit. They went down to Brazil. Bush agreed to that Rio Earth Summit, and they said, oh, don't worry, it's not going to be binding, and it's blah, blah, blah. They did it because they didn't want to appear to be against the environment. And, of course, Bush lost anyway, but he gave us that agreement. What happened after that, and what happened to America, and how did this start the tentacles of sustainable development just start penetrating all aspects of our society at that point at a much higher level?
Yeah. This is what really brought it all together. At that point, nobody had heard a discouraging word about the environmental movement. And Congress, everything they said, everything they were being pressured to do things, they did it because, well, we have to protect the environment. This is just an absolute, everybody believed this was a case. And nobody brought up anything that said, wait a minute, this is nuts. And so they were moving right along, putting that in place. And, the idea of Agenda 21 was that they called it a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. That's what they called it inside. And
that's not too ambitious, is it? Sorry, go ahead.
That's right. Yeah. And all voluntary, too.
Yeah.
And they move from there. As I said, the real thing that really got it moving at that point was after Bush left office, and the next year Bill Clinton came in.
Yes, that's what you mentioned.
So creating the National President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that's what began to make it the rule of the government, and changing everything. Up until then, we talked about recycling, and there were dirty rivers and things. I remember people volunteering to go out and help clean up the riverbeds and things like that, and recycling and that kind of thing. That's about where it was at that point. But then we have every federal agency. Yeah,
I was just watching an Odd Couple TV show where Oscar Madison, they're burying a dead parrot, and they're like, well, let's go put it in the East River. He goes, well, why are you bringing the shovel? You don't need a shovel. We're going to the river. He's like, have you seen the East River lately? This would have been like 1970, right at the first Earth Day. But it was.
River caught on fire in Cleveland. So, yeah.
That's right. Yes. So what they did is they exploited legitimate issues to then go, as you say, a complete reordering of our society. Well, that morphs into the climate agenda. At what point did climate just take over the entire environmental movement? What is there a year you can pinpoint when they just basically, because when I was growing up, you had the 70s, the global cooling scare, you had the resource scarcity, you had overpopulation. In the 80s, you had the rainforest scare, acid rain. The rainforest went all the way through to the late 90s. It doesn't seem like climate change really took over until the early 2000s, and really until Al Gore's film. But when do you think, is there a year you can say climate? They basically got all the other issues and went all in on climate and merged them together in support of climate. Is there some year America did that?
It was within, it was with the Earth Summit in 1992, and that's where the real focus came, a solid focus, because it wasn't just Agenda 21 that came out of that. You had the Biodiversity Treaty, and you had things on the forests and so forth. There were four.
That gave birth to the UN climate process, the annual meetings as well. Right. Yes.
And it became, this was the UN working for global governance. That's what the purpose was. And this was the excuse to put it into place. And so it just started to grow. And, it's just kind of like the pandemic, where, they came up with this excuse, we've got this crisis. And that's what it became, the fear factor, the crisis. We've got to do something about this. As I said, the environmentalists, telling you that, it doesn't matter what rights you think you have. And so like that, when we started, it was in early, late 1990s, but early 2000s, we started to try to fight this and make people understand it. And of course, we were all called, black helicopters, and had the tinfoil hats, and we're all a bunch of crazies on this. And my favorite attack against our side is, there are no blue helmeted troops at City Hall. This is just voluntary. Yes. And they continue to stick to this day. They continue to say Agenda 21, these ideas, they're just voluntary, even though they've achieved about 70% of their goals at this point. What you ended up with, and we have to go through this, because it's not, I can spend the next hour talking about how it has nothing to do with protecting the environment, as we've mentioned here, but the goal is global governance. When you are, that's your goal, most of the countries in the world are set up to where government tells you what your rights are. The United States was set up completely different. Our constitution, our founding documents are based on the idea that you are born with your rights and it's government's job to protect them. And we promoted free enterprise, private property ownership, and individual liberty. And this was a roadblock for the forces that were working to put climate change or put global control in place. And they had to change our system. How are they going to do that? And they started with these radical environmental movements. And so I'll tell you this, 30 years of fighting it, sustainable development, which is the excuse for it all, cannot be implemented unless it destroys private property. This is why I'm advocating across the country to city councils and county commissions, state legislatures, if you have protection of private property, you can stop putting this in place. If you look at the comprehensive plans every community has, which we never used to have comprehensive plans until they started putting this in place. States started ordering their counties and their cities to do comprehensive plans to stop chaotic growth, to protect the environment. But I challenge people to go into their comprehensive plan and find one single word that says anything about private property protection. It's not there. And, that they will fight us trying to defend private property with everything they've got, because they know that will stop this whole move if we could do that.
All right. Well, you recently wrote an article, I ran at climatedepot.com, and the Chinese threat to local communities is real. While helping to destroy the USA, China is getting rich from it. It goes back to that Donald Trump 2012 tweet about the whole green agenda is basically invented by the Chinese so China can benefit. But tell us, give us a quick anecdote about Ohio and your home state, of how China is infiltrating your local economy. And we only have about 2 minutes or a minute and a half to tell us.
Well, the Chinese have figured out, you have to understand a communist dictatorship, and there's no free enterprise there. There's no private companies. But they see one way, as I just described, about how they need to change our culture, change our economic system and everything, that getting us to accept solar and wind instead of dependable electricity and so forth, that this is what they need to do. And they are putting massive amounts of effort into getting that done. And back in my home state of Ohio, a little town called Pataskala, only has about 18,000 people that live there. And they have moved in with the help of some government agencies to put together a massive plant to assemble solar panels. All the materials to be assembled are coming from China. And they're going to have like 800 people in this massive plant doing this. There are other places around the state and other states are doing the same thing. And there's they've created this shell organization or company called Illuminate USA. And this is owned basically by a group called Longi, which is a partner with Invenergy, which is a Chinese corporation. And so this is the Chinese trying to pretend like this is all made in America.
And they're getting U.S. taxpayer. And they're getting U.S. taxpayer dollars because it's made in America. Yes. So it's a fraud.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, we're out of time. Tom DeWeese, president of the American Policy Center and national grassroots coordinator for CFAC. Thank you for joining the program today, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. See you next time. Thanks for watching.